This is Eco Radio KC, a locally produced exploration of positive solutions to the ecological challenges we face as we work to create a healthier future for our community and the planet.
Good evening, and thank you for tuning in to Eco Radio. On tonight's program, Michael Price has made a couple of films about the water in our area. We'll talk to Michael, as well as Evan Smalley, who is featured in Price's work and has formed the Bannister Federal Complex Water Testing Group and is with Missouri Stream Teams. But first, I'm Natural E with your headline news. EcoWatch.com reports an order of Catholic nuns and the grassroots coalition Lancaster Against Pipelines have built an open-air chapel in Columbia, Pennsylvania, along the proposed route of the Atlantic Sunrise Pipeline to stall construction of the $3 billion project. The nuns considered the fracked gas pipeline, a project of Oklahoma-based pipeline developer Williams Partners, a violation of their beliefs and environmental values. The Federal Energy Regulatory Commission approved the pipeline earlier this year and ruled that Williams Partners has the right to construct, maintain, and operate the pipeline on the private land. Williams Partners has since filed an emergency court order to seize the nuns' land and build the pipeline. A judge has scheduled a court hearing for July 17th. Environmental activist Aaron Brockovich is helping Oklahoma's Pawnee Nation take on several fracking companies in a lawsuit alleging that damages to its tribal buildings and reservation property was the result of man-made or induced earthquakes. National Geographic reports that the Native American tribe has retained the law firm Whites in Luxembourg with the aid of Brockovich to sue Eagle Road Oil LLC, Cummings Oil Company, and 25 other oil and gas companies. In September 2016, a magnitude 5.8 earthquake, the state's largest ever recorded, struck near the town of Pawnee. The tribe alleges that wastewater injected into wells operated by the defendants caused the record-breaking quake and is seeking damages to real and personal property, market value losses, as well as punitive damages. The Midwestern state is not previously known for seismic activity. Before 2009, Oklahoma felt 2 earthquakes per year. But in 2014, the numbers jumped to about 2,500 in 2014, 4,000 in 2015, and back to 2,500 in 2016. Although there were fewer tremors last year, Oklahoma felt more 4.0 quakes in 2016 than any other year. Another damaging quake struck the state in November, a 5.0 near Cushing, one of the largest oil hubs in the world. StLouisPublicRadio.org reports the Missouri Department of Agriculture halted the sale or use of any products containing the Monsanto-made herbicide dicamba on Friday afternoon. In a news release, the department said that all products that contain dicamba and are labeled for agricultural use won't be sold. The use of the product could bring penalties, the state said. The agency said that it had received more than 130 pesticide drift complaints this year from people who did not put the herbicide on their crops. Already, farmers in 10 states, Missouri and neighboring Arkansas included, have sued Monsanto for seed damage that they attribute to the pesticide. LawrenceJournalWorld.com reports a Lawrence business illegally dumped several thousand gallons of cooking grease into a city manhole, causing water contamination and intensive cleanup. The grease was dumped last week into a manhole near the intersection of West 6th Street and Monterey Way and was of a magnitude that Bond had not seen before. He said it isn't yet known what business dumped the grease, but that it was done deliberately. The city issued a health and stream advisory Saturday for the area near 6th Street and Monterey Way after elevated bacteria and contaminants were detected. Dumping or spilling animal fats and vegetable oils can cause devastating impacts on aquatic environments, according to the EPA. A spill of only 1 gallon of oil can contaminate 1 million gallons of water. The Lawrence Police Department did not immediately respond to a request for additional information regarding the investigation. NukeResister.org reports, in keeping with the tradition of Interdependence Day, the recognition of our need for each other, as well as the impact of our actions on others, 83-year-old Catholic priest Carl Kabat took action on July 4th at the Kansas City National Security Campus. Carl's attempt to incarnate the destructiveness of nuclear weapons by symbolically pouring red paint on the National Nuclear Security Administration sign was thwarted by employees of Honeywell. After 5 years of annual actions on Interdependence Day, Kabat witnessed security personnel at all of the entrances to the facility for the first time. Despite the heavy rainfall and security presence, Kabat opted for the bike path in his single-minded pursuit of nuclear disarmament. Further down the path, he was met by security personnel who prevented him from getting any closer. He was charged with trespassing and released, being issued a court appearance for August 8th. After spending 18 years in prison over the past 3 years, Father Kabat remains committed to this pursuit of nuclear disarmament, and he insists that nuclear weapons are insane, not him. At this time, I'd like to turn it over to Mr. Mike Murphy.
All right. Thank you very much, Natural E. We've got a terrific show lined up for you tonight. A lot about water in Kansas City area, particularly South Kansas City, particularly the Blue River. So as Natural E mentioned at the outside of the show, we have Michael Price, the filmmaker, and he's made a great documentary that was shown on KCPT about the rising water prices and what has gone into that. And so we'll hear all about that. And also Evan Smalley is here. And Evan is, as Natural E mentioned at the beginning of the show, is very much involved in water quality in that neck of the woods, both with testing with regard to the Bannister Federal Complex, which we'll get into later, and as well as being part of the Missouri stream teams. And we'll find out more about that as well. But we've kind of talked about how to do this show. Do we come take the big view and drill our way down, or do it the opposite way? We're going to take the big view and drill our way down. So I'm going to let Craig take over and talk to one of our guests. Hello, Craig.
All right, Mike. Okay, so we're going to start with Michael Price. And you connected, you did a show on KCPT about water rates, but you connected it to water quality. Let's get into a little bit, a few minutes about water rates, and then tie it into how that's impacted by the quality.
Well, I probably don't need to tell you. I don't need to tell your audience who live in Kansas City, Missouri, at least, that water rates.
I don't live in Kansas City, Missouri.
You don't live in Kansas. Well, there we are. But I'm sure those of your audience who do live in Kansas City, Missouri, be more than aware that water rates have rocketed over the past couple of decades. In fact, since the year 2000, they've risen by over 240% in Kansas City, Missouri. And what we're told is that this is largely explained by a 2010. Consent decree that was issued by the Environment Protection Agency that required the city of Kansas City, Missouri to stop pumping raw sewage into the Blue River, the little-known Blue River that swings around the south of Kansas City and then up through the east of the city before it joins the Missouri River. Now, the Blue River, as I say, they're trying to stop it from being polluted so heavily. The EPA gave the city of Kansas City, Missouri, 25 years to sort out the sewage spills, and it's going to cost anywhere between $4.5 and $5 billion for the city to do this. Where is the money coming from? Well, by and large, it's coming from water ratepayers, which is why they've seen those steep hikes. And that is really how the two stories, the Blue River and water rates, sort of unhappily for a lot of people, coincide.
And now, when we talk about the Blue River, I also hear the term Blue River watershed. Can you tell, for listeners who might not know what watershed is referring to,
Have a go. And I mean, Evan Smalley here is a water expert as well. And he actually is looking to improve his local watershed that runs into the Blue River. So he must chip in as well. Don't leave me hanging here, Evan. But my understanding is that a watershed is an area of land where rainwater, the water that's landing on which, will ultimately drain into a particular river. So, interestingly, for the Blue River and its watershed, the watershed straddles both Kansas and Missouri. In fact, most of the Blue River's watershed, about 60%, I believe, is in fact in Kansas. So any water that's landing in this huge area will flow into the Blue River. And the important thing about watersheds is this, that if you own a property there, a house, you've got a parking lot, say you're a business with a parking lot, you've got a roof, you've got a lawn even, all rainwater that's landing on that is ultimately going to pick up what's on that and take it into the Blue River, unless it gets the chance to filter it out properly. So if you spray nasty stuff on your lawn that gives you a nice green glowing lawn, that's great for you. But it's not so great for the environment, and it's not so great for what it then means will flow into the Blue River. But Evan's very much your expert on watersheds.
Okay. Yeah, that's where a thing called a riparian zone is really important. A riparian zone is just an area of plants and dirt where water filters through. And unfortunately, one of the main problems that we have is that there's a lot of parking lots in Johnson County and in southern Kansas City that accumulate salt in the winter, and there's not much riparian zone, which is really important to a healthy waterway, so that all the tributaries are fed with clean water that's been filtered carefully through the earth.
And the Blue River, it starts with Indian Creek, is that right?
No, it doesn't. In fact, the Blue River starts down south of Overland Park. It's around 40 miles long, and it starts where two creeks meet, Wolf Creek and Coffee Creek. And then it flows around the south of the city and up through the east part of the city before it joins the Missouri River. Now, I had the opportunity in the making of this film for KCPT to go and film at where those two creeks meet. And it's a magical, magical place. It's private land. I was taken on there by a hunter on his 4x4. It's a beautiful, beautiful, pristine piece of land. And the river itself looks absolutely perfect and clean. As you follow the river down, as I did in the process of making this film, I mean, I don't suppose it would come as any great surprise, but it picks up a lot of stuff. And also the sort of the environment in which it's flowing through sort of worsens as well, to my eye again. I mean, it ends up where it's just sort of channelized through concrete before it meets the Missouri River. So it could be, and in parts it is, a beautiful natural resource for us to enjoy and celebrate as a city. But it's not easy to get to. And unfortunately, as it swings south and it heads east in particular, it becomes less and less pristine. It becomes dirtier and dirtier.
Yeah, a lot of that comes from what's called combined sewer overflow, or CSO. One of the real problems is that when a sewer system, which theoretically should carry away all the funky stuff that humans do, combines with a rainwater system, it becomes flooded, and it then transports all of that sewage directly to the river. It overflows into the river, and combined sewer overflow contributes a lot of terrible chemicals, and also E. coli, of course, but also all the undigested pharmaceuticals that people take. It's putting sewage into a river is not good.
And so they're using the same sewer pipes for both the sewage and rainwater?
Well, they connect.
Okay.
So it's a system that was designed and is being used in the old sewerage systems. It's not a system that you'd find in Johnson County, but it's a system that's to be found there in the older parts of Kansas City, Missouri, where in order to prevent water backing up to the sewerage system or backing up into people's basements, the water is allowed to flow, the rainwater, the stormwater is allowed to flow straight into the sewerage system and then combines there, and the whole lot just flows out into the river. It's using the river, in effect, as a drain.
Okay. And now that's different, I think, from in Wyandotte County. My understanding from Mayor Holland was that the eastern part of the county has the old combined system, but as you move west, it's a separate system.
Right. Well, I know that they also, I believe, are subject to an EPA consent decree, which is requiring them to upgrade their old sewerage system. And it'd be interesting to find out some more about how they're paying for that. The terrible irony for the residents of Kansas City, Missouri, in this, is that they're paying to clean up a river. They're paying to clean up the combined sewer overflow system that Evan was talking about there. But it's a river that's becoming increasingly polluted because of runoff through development that's taking place upstream in Johnson County.
And you mentioned, you alluded to feces as being one of the problems, and herbicide on the lawns. What about, is there along the Blue River, is there any industrial complexes that are...
There are lots and lots of industrial complexes alongside the Blue River. Okay. What exactly they're spilling in, I'm not sure.
Yeah, well, one of those is the Bannister Federal Complex, which is a very well-known EPA Superfund type of site where a lot of toxins have been stored. They're currently trying to find a way to, for the government, the National Nuclear Security Agency, to divest themselves of responsibility for the cleanup of that site by selling it to a new party. And that's why it's really important that we get involved and make sure that the way they do that is responsible.
Okay, so if they sell that to a new party, that party then would they assume the legal responsibility for cleaning that up?
Exactly. And it's a really complicated thing. I do believe there's a lot of honest people working with the Department of Natural Resources, and they're trying to solve a very hard problem, which is for decades. In the past, people were very irresponsible about what they thought they should do. If anybody's interested, there is a resource on Facebook called the Bannister Federal Complex Water Quality Testing that you can go to, and you can get lots of exact scientific results that are available. Unfortunately, there's not as much available as there should be, and so we need to lobby them to make sure that the water quality is being tested more carefully.
Who's the them we need to lobby?
Department of Natural Resources, Missouri Department of Natural Resources is one. Uh-huh. They're the ones who are primarily responsible for water quality testing results. Also, the EPA is involved in that.
And what about the county or the city? Do they play into this at all?
Yeah, the city also test. And I mean, I know that talking to Evan before he came on the show, he's been doing a lot of research into what exactly is going into the river near to where he lives. He can see it with his naked eye, the stuff that's going into the river. But it's not, if we say that this is our river, if we say that this is the source of some of our drinking water, it goes into the Missouri River. Nearly 50% of public water in Missouri that's drunk comes from the Missouri River. You know, we want our river to look pretty, yes, but this is also like a fundamental for life. We need access to clean water. If that's what we say, if that's what we believe, then we need to have information about what exactly is going into our river. And this information, talking to Evan, and my own experience to an extent as well, is not easy to come by. This information should be published online. It's our river, tell us what's in it.
Well, I know in regard to that, in the film you mentioned that there's, back in 2006, six impairments, which I assume we're referring to six different forms of contamination going into the river. And then in 2011, there was 11 impairments.
Well, I think what I'm looking at there is this idea that rather inconveniently, the Blue River watershed straddles both Kansas and Missouri. Mm-hmm. So it requires, logically, it requires a watershed approach. It requires Kansas and Missouri to work together to tackle the water quality holistically. And they're not just responsible for the bit in their area, but we're all responsible for it, both people who live in Kansas and Missouri. The problem is for the people who live in Missouri to an extent is that because of this issue of runoff that's taking place in Kansas, they have seen an uptick in the number of contaminants that are going into the water on their side of the watershed. It's flowing downstream. It's taking those contaminants into Missouri. And that's by and large, as I say, explained by the developments that have been taking place. The population is increasing there in Johnson County. They're building more stuff. When water lands on an impermeable surface, it picks up what's on that surface and takes it into the river, and it's not nice stuff.
And when you said six and then 11 contaminants, those are obviously would be the ones that they know about. Is there concern or evidence that there's a lot of other contaminants that they have not been able to identify?
That's a great question. To be honest, from the research that I did, they're very, very thorough in the testing that they do on the Kansas side of the border. I think from memory, I think it was over 80 things that they test for. It seems to be done very, very thoroughly. And I should say as well, to be fair to Johnson County Wastewater, they've invested tens and tens of millions of dollars, like $130 million or so, to try and clean up the water that's coming out of their wastewater treatment plants. They are doing all that they can do there. It's a very expensive business, but if you don't have adequate riparian zones, if you've got a lot of development taking place, if we're seeing the heavier rainfall as climate change starts to take effect, as some people are saying, then we're going to see more of these nasty contaminants making their way into what ultimately, if it's not our drinking source, is the drinking source of the communities downstream of where we live.
Okay. And you mentioned, too, that the EPA has given them 25 years to comply. So do either of you comment on that? Why is it so long?
Well, it was actually long because Kansas City, Missouri said, we need a long time because this is going to cost a lot. In fact, the city may be going back and asking for more time because the bills have gone up so much. Just on that point, it doesn't need to mean that the bills have gone up. That is a political decision, not by the EPA. The EPA, and you could argue quite rightfully, have said to Kansas City, Missouri, you need to stop pumping raw sewage into the Blue River because it flows into the Missouri River, which is a water source, drinking water source for the communities downstream. The EPA, arguably, has done nothing wrong in doing that. Kansas City, Missouri have decided, they've taken the political decision that equals water bills going up and up and up and up. In St. Louis, which was subject to a similar consent decree, they have to also sort out their waterways, they decided that they were going to borrow money instead as a means of protecting their ratepayers from steep hikes. And they've done that. I'm not saying it's the perfect solution, but their wastewater bills have not gone up as much, as steeply, as those of Kansas City, Missouri residents.
Yeah. Well, we're going to take our first break now. Okay. If anyone's interested in joining in on the conversation, the number is 816-931-5534. We'll be back with more of this fascinating discussion.
This week,
now our goal is end the orphan crisis through exactly the right. Church and through
it's
families.
The story of the overseas adoption market, which is largely supported by evangelical Christians.
Their basic message is that just as Christians feel that they were adopted by God into his family of believers, they need to go replicate that experience by adopting a child here on earth.
That's next time on Interfaith Voices.
Tuesday at noon.
Hello, this is Joseph Jackson. Join me on Cowtown Conversations, where we will discuss matters that impact your life as a resident of the Kansas City metropolitan area. Every Thursday morning at 9 a.m., right after Democracy Now!
Nature's water filter, the freshwater mussel, on this current cast. Native mussels do some heavy lifting in a stream.
They feed on algae and plankton, and they help to purify that aquatic water system.
That's Tamara Smith of the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. She says mussels have a fascinating life cycle. Females lure in a fish and attach their larvae to its gills for a ride upstream. But in many areas, dams block the way, leaving the hitchhikers in peril. The mussels also face pollution and invasive species muscling in on their territory. Relatively undisturbed waterways like Pennsylvania's French Creek are strongholds for threatened mussels. But across the country, they're declining rapidly, paying a heavy price for pollution. Current Cast, produced with Cornell's Atkinson Center for a Sustainable Future and made possible by the Foundation for Pennsylvania Watersheds. Online at currentcast.org.
All right, we're back. And Craig, you were just about to ask a question before I so rudely interrupted you.
When we were talking about the rates, I was curious, was St. Louis versus here, is St. Louis, have they done something different to keep rates down, or is it just from the borrowing?
They've borrowed money, so the city is on the hook for substantial debt, but it means that they're paying it back over a long time, and it means that they've been able to protect their ratepayers to an extent. That's a political decision. Next year, their ratepayers' wastewater bills are going to be about 30% less than those of Kansas City, Missouri residents. And that's because Kansas City, Missouri residents, by and large, are footing the bill for the upgrade in the sewage infrastructure here.
So in St. Louis, so does that, by them borrowing like that, is that causing their taxes to go up instead?
Well, I'm not sure. There'll be other. Obviously, it's not a perfect solution. Yeah. Somebody has to pay for it in the end. All I can talk to is the idea that they've taken that decision to try and avoid steep bill rises.
So let me jump in here. So the way I understand what your film is presenting is that Kansas City was told by the EPA, you've got to clean up, especially with this raw sewage dumping into the river. Yeah. Kansas City responded by raising the price of water to pay for that, to help pay for that. And for years now, there's been this cleanup going on, but now there's other stuff coming in from Johnson County. And so
Johnson County and from Kansas City, Missouri, you see, the EPA's mandate was very narrow. It said, you have got to deal with these combined sewer overflow pipes. You've got to stop the raw sewage from flowing in. But it didn't deal specifically with runoff, which is an issue on this side of the state line as it is on the other, which is when water lands, you know, rainwater, stormwater lands on an impermeable surface and runs into the river.
So one of the things in your film, you talk about the Marlboro neighborhood.
Yes.
So can you tell us about that? Because it sounds like that deals with the runoff issue.
Yes, it does. I mean, going back to the point that Evan made, which is one way, you know, you can deal with dirty rainwater that's flowing over from a parking lot is to have a riparian zone, so a natural area of woodland that the water can filter through, so that by the time it gets into the river, it's, you know, been filtered, all those nasty things have been filtered out of it. Well, what they're doing in Marlboro, and this is pretty extraordinary, and you won't find too many examples of this, I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, Evan, across the country, but what they're going for there, what they're putting tens of millions of dollars into, about $85 million has been earmarked for this in total, is a green... a green zone, which is looking to stop all the rainwater that's coming down from carrying these nasty contaminants. It's green infrastructure is the term I was searching for there, green infrastructure. So, you know, you have a heavy rainfall. We see those once or twice, don't we, during the year. Well, this green infrastructure, which is like, you know, rainwater gardens and parks, it stores the water. It stores the water and allows the water to filter through the ground, and all that nasty stuff that it's picked up is filtered out before it goes into the Blue River, before that flows into the Missouri River.
Okay. And now Blue River too, when we were talking about where it goes, starts and goes, I think in the film it said it ends with Brush Creek.
Brush Creek is a tributary. It has a number of tributaries. Okay. You've got Brush Creek. You've got Indian Creek as well. The two big ones, I think I'd be right in saying, and it flows ultimately into the Missouri River. Meets the Missouri River. You can't really get to it. Correct me if I'm wrong, Evan. I don't think you can get to where it meets on foot. You can take a boat, but it's sort of northeast Kansas City, Missouri, is where it flows into the Missouri River.
Hey, I wanted to ask a question about the money part. You know, I've heard that other cities who have had to fix the combined sewer overflow issue rely on property tax money. In Kansas City, we can't rely on the property tax money because there's some sort of law that we in Missouri passed, I don't know how many years ago, that stated that we can't use that type of tax money to fund things that don't directly affect the person who pay those taxes. That's why they're reaching into the water bill.
Yeah, that's right. It's called the Hancock Amendment. So, you know, to be fair to the Kansas City, Missouri, it is kind of boxed in because of the something called the Hancock Amendment. You can only pay for the services that you're provided. So you're quite right there. There is no easy fix to this. But one important point of this is that we're not just talking about rising water bills. We're also talking about cutoffs. So where people, families, households are denied access to water because their bill is over 50 days late and over $150. Since 2008, nearly 140,000 accounts have been cut off in Kansas City, Missouri for its 150,000 customers. Obviously, within that number, there'll be multiple cutoffs for the same house. But that is a legacy of misery. That is a legacy of misery that is linked to rising water rates. And these rates are set to go up and up and up and up. Now, we have to ask ourselves whether there is adequate provision in place to mean that those taps keep flowing when that mother at home, the single mother in the film at home, wants to give her sons a shower before they go to school. She wants to cook them some food when they get home from school. Now, we're talking about rivers, which are critically important. But we also need to talk about access to drinking water, cooking water, water that you use to flush your lavatory, your toilet at home. And at the moment, we seem in Kansas City, Missouri, to be cutting off a lot of people. Last year, it was around 21,000 account cutoffs. In Johnson County, Water One there, which has about the same number of customers, 1,500 cutoffs. Obviously, there's issues around, you know, the fact that Johnson County, by and large, is richer than say Jackson County. But if you look, if you drill down as we do in the film, water rates and rivers. If you drill down into the data, you'll see that there are four zip codes that are really impacted by these cutoffs, and these are the poorest parts of the city.
And we do have a caller online.
What's your name and where are you calling from?
I'm Richard. I'm in South Kansas City.
Hi. What do you want? What do you have a question or a comment?
No, I have a comment. I wanted to add about what's going on with the Missouri River and what's going on coming into the Blue River from the complex at the old Bannister plant, plus the Bannister complex, the federal complex and the Bannister Mall.
Okay.
There's a lot of things that are going in there that the government doesn't want to own up to. The beryllium that's killing a lot of the ex-employees or the families who have people working there, and they take it home to their families because it's in them and it affects their families, whatever is around them in the water and the nuclear waste that they're working with out there.
And I think that one of the things that is so important that we have accurate, easily accessible water quality testing results published by the correct government agencies to demonstrate exactly what you're talking about. And
well,
those things can be found, some of those results can be found if you're interested at a Facebook page called the Bannister Federal Complex Water Quality Testing page. There's a lot of results there, but they're not testing for beryllium specifically, and I agree, they really should test for, there's literally thousands of documented contaminants stored at the Bannister Federal Complex that they are not testing for.
The federal government...
not only at the Bannister plant, at the other military sites where they've stored nuclear waste from the 40s. So I'm talking about 90 years plus.
That's true.
Mm-hmm.
And all of it's going into our water system, so it's not just the Johnson County water that's coming to Kansas City. It's the stuff that's going on in North Dakota and what they're doing up there in the Dakotas to the Indians, to the Lakotas and the other Indians, because they're storing it in the Black Hills and drilling, and it's coming into the Missouri River to us.
Well, I could not agree with you anymore. It's so true, and I think as a country, we have got to understand the preciousness of the resource of water.
Thank you for your comments, caller. We do have another caller, so thank you.
Thank you very much for the opportunity, guys. Keep up the good work.
I appreciate it. Caller, you are on the air. What's your name and what part of town are you calling from?
My name is John.
Okay, John, what's your question?
I live between Brookside and Waldo.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, I've noticed my water bill, skyrocketing over the last, 10 years. I've lived in this location 32 years. I used to be like $15 every couple of months. Anyway. But one thing I noticed about the bill is that I only use about, 1,500 gallons of water a month, you know, which is probably not too much if you compare it to the average. But I'm only one person. But I've noticed that conserving water, it's kind of what they're doing is you're not paying for water use, you know, so much. Because even though I don't use much water, my bill's still, you know, really high. And reducing my water use doesn't really help that much because the charges aren't for, you know, using water, apparently. You know, it's for all the infrastructure costs they have.
That's right. I mean,
the cleanup, which is a shame because it's a disincentive for people to try to save water at home, you know, and in their businesses.
Thank
you. Because it doesn't affect the bill that much.
Right.
You know, you still get a whopping bill whether you use much water or not.
Yes.
Another thing, on that Bannister complex issue, I talked to a good friend who's really politically, you know, savvy, but she went to some kind of a meeting that was hosted by the company that's going to buy that facility. I don't know whether they've already purchased it or not. But anyway, she said, I was talking about it, what a nightmare it is. And she says, oh, no. She said, they assured us that everything's under control and they can clean it up for it. From what I heard, the government signed is saying it would cost to clean that place up. What this company is telling the public it will cost them to clean it up is peanuts. It doesn't sound like there is any way in the world that their figure is realistic. You know, a few $100 million, a couple $100 million.
Yeah, I think when the federal government 10 years ago made some kind of estimate, it was closer to $1 billion.
And, there you go, That was many years ago.
Right, right.
And they're telling them to the public today, this company that's going to buy it, that they can clean it up just fine for a couple of $100 million.
Yeah, that's why we really need to be vigilant, and we need to speak out and make phone calls and send emails and talk to this company and talk to the people at the National Nuclear Security Agency who are overseeing the transfer of that, because we want to make sure that they provide details of how they're going to fix the site and also the testing of the results close by close downstream from the site, so that we can see exactly what's going on and make sure that they can do it right.
I mean, where does the flow start at that facility, and where does it go from there?
Well, there's three flap gates that are easily seen, but if you really want to see an example of environmental concern easily visible, go to the Prospect Bridge at Blue River Road and take a look at this 30-foot round flap gate that is constantly leaking strange colored water, and you can see it in there's a YouTube video of it. If you're interested, let us know and I can show it to you on YouTube.
We actually just shared that on the Eco Radio KC Facebook page, so it is posted up there right now.
Where does it go, though? Where does that water
It goes
go
right
that
in
point?
It goes directly into the Blue River just upstream of my land.
Right.
The first caller had also talked about some of the other military installations and issues. Does the old ammunition plant in DeSoto, is that being dumped into the river?
That's one of the problems. I had a long meeting with Ray Franchot of the Missouri Department of Natural Resources, where he showed me in great detail so many things about this. And one of the things you might find sort of comforting is that he said that the Bannister Federal Complex, in comparison to some of these other Superfund sites, is actually fairly well controlled practically and is being addressed fairly carefully. That's what he said. Mm-hmm. The problem is actually getting credible water quality testing results is difficult, so we need to make sure to keep on them for that.
Yeah, but I think it's just a travesty that the U.S. government would dump that Superfund site on a municipality, even a state, you know, just walk off and say it's your problem.
Well,
help me this thing up.
Another piece of the puzzle is that they're not walking away from the whole thing. If this transfer does go through, it's to CenterPoint, right? Mm-hmm. If this transfer does go through, and it hasn't gone through yet, right?
Correct.
It's only a transfer of half of that Bannister Federal Complex. GSA is still retaining part of it, which includes this landfill. And this landfill is right next to the Blue River. And we were talking about this out in the green room, that when I asked someone from the NSA about it at that public hearing, I said, well, what's in there? And they said, well, it's landfill since the 40s on a weapons plant. There's weapons, there's explosives. And it's like so close to the river since the 40s. And they did say in this meeting also that the Army Corps of Engineers, I forget the word they used, but basically doing reconnaissance, looking into what it will take to mitigate this situation. So
yeah, I have all those documents. If anybody wants them, they can contact us through this situation, and I can give you most of those documents. The one good thing that we can do, clearly we've got to learn from the mistakes made in the past by our forefathers who put terrible things near rivers, but we can also be responsible in just not flushing chemicals, paints, being right. really careful to try to make sure in our lives that we are careful about what we put down the drain.
And right. so, caller, I'm going to let you go because we do have another
sure.
caller.
Okay.
Thank you for your call.
Thanks.
Caller, you're on the air. What's your name and where are you calling from?
This is Ann, and I'm calling from Kansas side.
Uh-huh.
And I was at some of the public meetings about the Bannister Federal Complex, and I understand that the governor is going to have to sign off on this transfer of the title, in that the governor will be responsible to make sure that there is, in fact, money to adequately clean it up, and that, you know, everything is legal, you know, that people are going to be responsible to protect the community around during the cleanup, protect our health and so forth.
Yeah.
And then also on another subject, I might mention that we're going to have a film at All Souls UU July 20th, Thursday night at 7 o'clock about the contamination in St. Louis in their river system.
Where is that going to be shown?
That's going to be at All Souls 45th and Walnut at 7 p.m. And then we're going to have the producer... director-producer there, Rebecca Camisa, and a mother of a 16-year-old, her son died 2 years ago of cancer, and she's from that area.
Hmm. Well, thanks, Ann. We appreciate the update.
Okay.
All right.
Thanks.
Okay. It's time for our next break. If you want to join in the conversation, the number to call is 816-931-5534. We'll be back for more of this discussion.
Farmers, First Nations, and landowners walk together along a proposed route for a pipeline for fracked gas to protect North Carolina. On Wings, Saturday at 2:30.
Abrupt climate change, faster than expected. Dr. Guy McPherson's Abrupt Climate Change Midwest Tour will be in Kansas City, Tuesday, July 18th at All Souls Unitarian Church, 4501 Walnut Street. Contact info at guymcphersontour.com or 816-305-2990. This message is brought to you by 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lazowitz, and this is Climate Connections. Walleye fishermen often say walleye are the tastiest fish in the world, and they've always been plentiful in Wisconsin's North Country.
This area of northern Wisconsin contains about 900 lakes. So these are separate lakes, and each one of them, 900 of them, have a walleye population.
Jake VanderZanden is with the University of Wisconsin-Madison. He says walleye populations are shrinking in many of these lakes. One reason is that people catch so many each year. But global warming is also a concern. Walleye prefer cold water, so rising temperatures may be contributing to their decline. And warmer water is more hospitable to bass.
These warm water fish, not surprisingly, are doing a lot better. And then those warm water fish could be predators or competitors with walleye. And there's only so many resources that go around in these lakes. So there's sort of like a new player in these lakes that's crowding out walleye in a way.
Scientists are trying to learn more about how global warming is affecting walleye populations and how to support these native fish. For now, Wisconsin stocks the lakes with hatchery-raised walleye, so people can still go out and catch their next big fish. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. Learn more at yaleclimateconnections.org.
And we're back in the studio. If you call quickly, we still might be able to get another phone call or two on the air at 816-931-5534. But there has been some great calls, great comments in here. And I wanted to ask, so this poor little, I was going to say this poor little Blue River, but there is a little Blue River. So this poor Blue River, sewer overflow, development runoff from out of state, and what?
And from the Missouri
and
side.
And from in-state, yeah. Too, right? It's just not, and then what are we worried about getting in in the river from Bannister? Is it PCBs? I mean, what is being tested for?
Well, it's not being tested until it's 20 for PCBs. The only consistent water quality testing that's been published to me is done 28 miles downstream, 10 miles after the Blue River hits the Missouri River. That's where they are testing for PCBs, which is a terrible idea. You need to test near the source, the point source.
And are they finding PCBs?
No, it's completely diluted by 28 miles downstream. Wow. I mean, it's totally a ridiculous test to do. But there's hundreds and thousands of chemicals that have been carefully documented in the environmental assessment that are not being tested for at all. And I think that we should make it clear to the Missouri Department of Natural Resources that we really do care about what we're allowing into the river, because we don't want to be a civilization that ruins water for every living creature on Earth just so that we can carelessly have sewers and, you know, parking lots.
Of the 11 contaminants that have been identified before, what are those?
Well, I think there's a lot more than 11, but they're only testing, the only available testing is things like for E. coli, that is a common one, which is from sewage, and chlorine, which is from bleaches and other stuff like that. Those are really serious problems on their own, but also there's a lot of silt, dirt, salt from winter salting. There's a lot of water quality testing results from the U.S. Geological Survey that are easily gotten online also.
And what are they doing? What form of cleanup are they doing? Does it include infrastructure changes and changing the sewer system so that it's separated?
Some does. That's the combined sewer overflow situation Michael would know more about. But as far as the Bannister complex, it's called remediation, and they're saying that what needs to be done is they're going to excavate the toxic soil, remove it, and take it to someplace in Kansas where it's not as close to a river, and then they're going to fill it with clean soil and cover it with what's called a clay cap so that water doesn't directly penetrate. Unfortunately, because it's at the bottom of a floodplain and there are hills all around it, the water table flows right under that clay cap. So they need to excavate the toxic soil. That's the main thing we need to make sure they do.
And the one point of encouragement as well, I think I'd like to just flag up, if I may, from the research that I did for the making of the film, Water Rates and Rivers, is that I describe them as an army of enthused conservationists, and Evan is certainly one of them, who care a lot about the Blue River and who are out there a lot of weekends, all weathers, trying to do their bit to clean up the Blue River. It's not a case of us just stepping back and saying to government, sort this out, oh, you're making our water bill. You know, there is a lot of people out there with their sleeves rolled up who are out there fishing rubber tires out of the river, who are out there doing this day in and day out and have been for a long time.
Yeah, there's a great project called the Project Blue River Rescue every year out of Lakeside Nature Center in Swope Park, where in the first week of April or so, we clean up literally hundreds of tons of tires and trash. We get lots of volunteers. So if you're interested in volunteering, look for the Project Blue River Rescue in early spring.
It's a beautiful river in parts. It's magical. You wouldn't believe it. You'd think that you're out in Colorado in parts. It's absolutely stunning. It's full of fish, the right sort of fish. You can hear birdsong, there's wildflowers. Imagine if it was like that, if it were like that throughout its entire length. How people would want to visit it, how future generations would be able to visit it and enjoy it.
And is this river one that's used for recreation too, like boating and stuff?
Well,
it used to be very much. But it's become so polluted and so harmed by the Corps of Engineers, who have removed all the riparian zones and all the oxbows, that it's pretty dirty now.
It's not always easy to get to either. That's the thing about it. There are certain parks like Minor Park where it is easy to get to, but especially in the east part of the city, it's not easy to get to. And then to Evan's point, would you want to get to it anyway? Because it's dirty, it's channelized, there's no walkway beside it. It's a place you really want to try and avoid. But it should be different, I'd argue. I mean, this river could be a, a glowing success for Kansas City and put it on the map. Kansas City, put Kansas City on the map nationally for the right reasons.
Okay, I think we are about out of time. I want to thank, we've been talking to Evan and Michael Price and about water quality issues in the Blue Shed, Blue River watershed area and the Bannister cleanup area. And we look forward to doing some more on water issues. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, guys. This has been great. We're going to turn it over to Natural E with the calendar. But please check our Eco Radio KC Facebook page because we posted a lot of things during this program germane to the show, including Evan's YouTube video and Michael's film and how to join that Bannister Federal Complex water testing site. So with that being said, I'll turn it over to Natural E.
Thank you, Mike. On July 12th, so Wednesday from 8:30 a.m. to 11:30 a.m., you can volunteer with Bridging the Gap in a new outreach partnership with Ripple Glass, Kansas City's glass recycling organization. Soon they'll be installing a new glass collection bin at IKEA. To help inform residents about this new collection bin, you can volunteer with Bridging the Gap. It's an easy, stress-free way to get outside and help increase recycling rates in our region. That's Wednesday, July 12th, 8:30 a.m. Find out more information by visiting bridgingthegap.org/events. The Sierra Club hosts their meeting at Overland Park Lutheran Church, 7 p.m. What day was it?
Tomorrow night, Tuesday.
Thank you so much. Tomorrow night, Tuesday at 7 p.m. You can arrive at 6:30 for refreshments. Overland Park Lutheran Church is at 79th and Lowell, and the Sierra Club has a topic for that for tomorrow evening is environmental toxins and children's health. If you're losing the battle against weeds in your garden, turn them into food by learning which ones are edible and the best ways to eat them at the Greens of Summer workshop. Burr Oak Woods Nature Center will show how purslane, dandelions, and other common weeds can be tasty. That's on July 18th, 9 a.m. You can visit Burr Oak Woods Nature Center online to find out more information about that. And finally, July 19th at 8 to 10 a.m., you can learn business strategies for reducing workplace waste and maximizing savings at a Green Business Network event from 8 to 10 a.m. Wednesday, July 19th at Goodwill Outlet. Local experts on sustainable waste management will offer ideas for best waste reduction practices for businesses. Participants will tour the Goodwill Outlet facility in Kansas City, Missouri, and learn how the organization processes nearly 4,500 tons of waste and unsold goods from its Metro Goodwill locations each year. Again, find more information and to register for that event by visiting bridgingthegap.org/events.
Okay, in case you haven't had enough about water, we'll go out with This Week in Water.
Ancient Rome offers a solution to sea level rise. That story and more on H2O Radio's weekly news report about water. I'm Jamie Sudler.
I'm Franny Halperin, and it's This Week in Water.
The situation in the South China Sea has been tense, and a recent move by Vietnam may have made it worse. The country has begun drilling for oil in waters claimed by China.
The BBC reports that Vietnam's drilling was kept secret for about 3 weeks because it was so sensitive. China claims more than 90% of the South China Sea, but a World Court arbitration panel rejected that claim in 2016.
For the last couple of years, Vietnam has avoided provoking its neighbor to the north, but now some say China may not react immediately to the drilling as it focuses on increasing trade. However, the Chinese have canceled border defense talks with Vietnam.
And adding more tension in the area, India is supporting Vietnam by providing naval patrol boats, satellite reconnaissance, and military training.
While much attention was paid to North Korea's test of its intercontinental ballistic missile, little notice was given to the Russian launch of an anti-ship missile in the Arctic. The Russian missile was launched from a submarine and traveled about 250 miles.
Of course, there's a significant difference between the North Korea weapon that can travel from one continent to another and the Russian rocket intended to destroy enemy vessels. But Russia's launch emphasizes that it's building up its military in the Arctic, where it now has nearly 80 ships.
Newsweek reports that in April of this year, Russia opened a military base in the Arctic and has plans for at least four more.
As stated by Russian President Putin, climate change has increased the number of days available for shipping and opened more routes through the Arctic, leading to what he called better economic opportunities.
There are five countries that claim territory in the Arctic. Besides Russia, they include the U.S., Denmark, Norway, and Canada.
About 2,000 years ago, the Romans were developing a material that might just help us combat sea level rise today.
The Romans used concrete that strengthens as it is exposed to salt water. In contrast, today's concrete corrodes within decades. The hope is that a new material based on the ancient ways may be used to build seawalls and other adaptations to counter intrusive waters.
The Washington Post reports that scientists examined the microscopic structures of Roman concrete samples and found that they used a volcanic ash in their recipe that makes it stronger and more durable when mixed with seawater.
The mixture formed crystals that stopped cracks from forming. Philip Brun, a research scientist who studied Roman monuments, told the Post that the concrete is the most durable building material in human history, and he says he is not prone to hyperbole, being an engineer.
The Romans used their concrete to build seawalls and piers that far outlasted the empire itself.
Many Republicans and Democrats are united against a Trump administration policy that will allow seismic testing for oil and gas development in oceans.
Earlier this year, the president signed an executive order that opened the Atlantic to offshore drilling. The government is now set to permit five companies to use seismic airgun blasting to detect reserves of oil and gas.
As reported in the Atlantic magazine, ships would tow dozens of cannons behind them that create sound explosions. The echoes that bounce back from the ocean floor allow technicians to locate petroleum deposits.
A group of 75 scientists have said that the amount of noise created by cannons kills or perturbs the entire range of marine life from whales to plankton.
Despite that, the administration is moving fast to permit the blasting, which could start off the Atlantic coast as early as this fall.
However, environmental groups and thousands of businesses are united against the testing, and they're getting support from Congress.
A Democrat from Virginia and a Republican from New Jersey have introduced a bill in the House that would ban the seismic practice, and a similar bill has been introduced in the Senate. Additionally, 103 members from both sides of the House signed a letter to Interior Secretary Ryan Zinke urging an immediate halt to the permitting.
They wrote that the seismic airgun testing puts at risk Atlantic coast economies dependent on healthy oceans. Nevertheless, it's expected that the permitting will go forward and then lawsuits will be filed to stop it. And finally, as we've been reporting, the bottled water market has been exploding. Americans drank nearly 13 billion gallons last year, edging out soda for the first time.
And they're not just drinking any old water. Specialty and mineral water products grew 75% between 2014 and 2016, according to the research and consulting firm Mintel.
We're talking your glacier waters, infused waters, and even something called prehistoric water. One remarkable finding jumped out in the research. Nearly 25% of Americans want organic water. But what's that?
The USDA says anything with the organic label, food, drinks, fabric, has to be, by definition, derived from living matter. That means, of course, containing carbon. But water is just atoms of hydrogen and oxygen. H2O.
Well, a company called Asarasi found a workaround, or should we say they tapped into a way to get the USDA to certify their water as organic.
Founder Adam Lazar got his idea after watching maple syrup being made. He noticed there was a lot of leftover water from the process. The water is technically drained from maple trees, living things, so boom, he got his certification.
Asarasi says their product is renewable and sustainable and doesn't pull from shrinking groundwater resources. They also say the water is, quote, free of impurities and the purest source of water in the world.
In the world? There's a lot of competition for that title from glacier waters and others. Tanzamaji water, sourced from Lake Tanganyika in Africa, claims to be prehistoric water and the purest water because the lake is so deep it's been untouched for millions of years and never been exposed to pesticides or other man-made contaminants.
For consumers who want pure bottled water, all these claims must make their choices kind of murky. This Week in Water is supported by the American Water Works Association. Discuss your water infrastructure challenges and solutions at WIC 17, October 30th through November 2nd. Find out more at awwa.org/H2O Infocon.
Thanks for listening to Eco Radio KC on 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.